You've written an article about urban planning in which you mentioned this term depressogenic. We were kind of discussing about it off air. What does this term entail?
It's an interesting term, isn't it?
Yeah. So,
listeners may have heard the term obesogenic before, which are environments that are associated with obesity or that may contribute to sedentary lifestyles. This term, depressogenic, is a term that encapsulates a broad range of mental health conditions, but it generally refers to built environments that may contribute to or foster or generate conditions where people have poor mental health outcomes.
So what kind of mental health problems have been shown to increase due to, as you mentioned before, the built environment that people live in?
So the literature is a little contentious, and okay. I know that some of the commentators on the conversation piece were quite cautious about what sort of inferences we can draw from the literature. But
there is
a literature that suggests that if people are disproportionately exposed to noise, high levels of noise, excessive light, are deprived of sleep, or lack access to green spaces where they can exercise, get fresh air, or even just have solitude, that may contribute to poor mental health outcomes. So this may, for example, be an inability to get relief from stress, to have a reduced cognitive load so you can clear your mind and recover and gather your thoughts and not feel so sort of burned out. If you're constantly in an environment that is overloading you cognitively and you don't get a chance to escape from that, it might increase levels of anxiety or in the longer term could contribute to issues such as depression.
When you say green space, do you mean kind of parks and lakes and things like that?
That's a great question, Matt. So, yes, it includes things like the traditional park, a neighbourhood park, those kind of things, but it also includes street trees, views out over water and over restful landscapes, urban forests, even community gardens can make a big difference in terms of giving people a chance to get some access to nature and get away from a hard surface, concrete, glass, asphalt built environment.
So these are, I guess you'd say that they're largely physical things, light, access to parks and stuff. Are there elements of the city which can cause strain which are not physical, perhaps more difficult to really quantify?
Yeah, there are indeed. And again, there's a little bit of contention around some of this, although it's probably the literature's more supportive around those kind of social conditions or preconditions. So we know, for example, that people who live in cities who are socially isolated, who don't have access to good social networks, who might not have what we call the social capital, the friends and colleagues they can draw upon and talk to about their problems, that they appear to be more likely to have issues around poor mental health. Whereas if you're not socially isolated, if you have a good friendship network, a good support network, people who can come and help out when you're feeling down or lend a hand at home, that can make a major difference to people's health and well-being.
Is that something that is more perhaps for people who have migrated to Australia? Would that be more of a problem than someone who's kind of lived here all their life? Is that something that you've looked into?
That's a good question. Not necessarily. So the literature certainly would support that recent migrants who may struggle to get a job, who may not speak English very well, who feel like they're being discriminated against in a workplace or at home, or who may have experienced abuse or encountered sort of racial vilification, that they certainly are more likely to feel socially isolated. They may just lack basic understandings of the way that Australian culture works. It's different to other cultures in some ways. We've got a fairly relaxed and convivial kind of culture, but there are still some things here that are a bit different to other places. But it's not necessarily recent migrants. You may also find that people who for various reasons, are having to live further away from their jobs to find affordable housing. Maybe they've had to go to a regional centre or are living right on the outskirts of a city that might not necessarily offer them the same sorts of opportunities for leisure and recreation and social interaction that you would find in the urban core, that they may be predisposed to poor mental health outcomes as well. And this can include long commuting time. Some people are sitting for an hour and a half, 2, 3, even 4 hours commuting in a private vehicle or on public transport, And that's time that they're not getting exposure to sunlight, not being able to exercise, and not necessarily having positive social interactions either.
If they're listening to 2SER, it might help a little bit, but I can see what you're saying. It's an interesting point, the concept of isolation, because if I think of isolation, I guess the intuitive thing is to think of, you know, maybe a rural area where you're living on a farm and there's no one for 50 kilometres. But I actually heard you coin it in a different interview where you said that you can actually be lonely in a crowd, which is kind of what you're getting at there, I think.
Exactly. It's very possible to be lonely in a crowd. If you're in a crowd of strangers and you don't feel a sense of belonging or attachment to a place, if you're new to an area or you don't have a long history of being around, you don't have family and friends who are in that area, you may feel very socially isolated. Some people will experience this when they move to a big city like New York or Shanghai, feeling like they're lost in a crowd of people and have no one to reach out and talk to. And it's an interesting condition, isn't it, Matt, where it is possible to be alone in a crowd.
Yeah. You mentioned something at the start, which is something which I've heard a bit about on 2SER and in the news about obesogenics. So this is the term where the urban planning has an impact, potentially a negative impact on health outcomes of people living in a particular area. So my understanding is that there's some kind of interaction between urban planners and maybe health organizations to discuss those kind of physical complaints like obesity. But I'm interested in if urban planners are thinking about these kind of issues, mental health problems regarding the, I guess, geography of a particular suburb or area. Is that a thing that urban planners are kind of thinking about at the moment?
That's a great question, Matt, and it's one that we've been interested in our research. I think it would be fair to say that this is not as common knowledge that you might find an awareness of mental health issues and perhaps the role that planners might play in addressing those issues compared to physical health, where it's pretty clear where parks or ovals haven't been provided or people living in cul-de-sacs or they're commuting a long distance to work or shops. You can certainly hold planners accountable for some of those outcomes, although planners don't build cities themselves as developers, but planners do play a role. Mental health outcomes, on the other hand, are a bit different. So there's probably not a large awareness among planners that alcohol stores, liquor outlets, when they're concentrated in marginalised or disadvantaged communities, so that's low-income communities or communities who don't have a lot of opportunities, that can then increase levels of domestic violence, for example. There's an emerging literature that suggests that there may be a relationship there.
Okay.
There's a literature which also suggests that people who may be disproportionately exposed to high levels of noise, for example, clustered around an airport or in a flight path or noise from roads or simply in medium and higher density development where there hasn't been an appropriate level of sound insulation and therefore are exposed to noise, that they may experience elevated rates of anxiety, stress and cognitive overload. So I think certainly there's a role that planners need to be aware of that they could potentially play, but they're not terribly aware of it from what we can tell from our research at the moment.
Seems like a relatively new concept, and I guess the more that we continue to talk about it, the more awareness that there's going to be. Jason, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us about it today.